brain is tangled. Cannot compute which emotion to drop into the bloodstream, fondness or bewilderment. For the love of God, this is Sebastian at his naughtiest. He shakes his head at me, and in that instant I realize I'm the naive one here. When he leans back and lets out a laugh, I'm screwed. Totally ruined. I can't read him. I can't grasp him. I have no idea what he's thinking, and if he's messing with me, or if he really is this good. But never before have I wanted so fiercely to lean forward and put my mouth on someone's neck, begging them to want me. Chapter 7. I drive home still in sort of a daze, barely aware of anything that happened after lunch. Classes are a blur. I helped Autumn with her calc homework until late, but I'm not confident I was very helpful, or that her answers ended up being correct. I've replayed my conversation with Sebastian over and over, and every time I wonder whether he looked as happy to see me as I think he did. We were flirting, I think. The idea of good, clean Sebastian leaving school for what I suspect was the simple thrill of doing something he wasn't supposed to is causing a serious malfunction in my brain. I'm also trying to wrestle with the idea that Sebastian will be gone for the next week. I've always liked school, but seeing him in seminar is pretty much the only thing making this final semester of high school bearable. A thought occurs to me, and I fumble for my phone. Can you text me while you are gone? I regret sending it almost instantly, but figure at this point, what do I have to lose? Thankfully, he doesn't let me spiral too long, and my screen lights up again. I'll be working with my editor, and don't know my exact schedule, but yeah, I'll try. I climb out of my car and shut the door, still smiling down at my phone when I stumble into the kitchen. Mom is at the sink, already wearing her bright rainbow pajamas, washing dishes. Hi, honey. Hey, I say, tucking my phone away and slipping out of my jacket. I'm distracted and drop it twice in an attempt to hang it up. You're home early. Let's just say I needed a glass of wine, she says, closing the dishwasher door. She motions to the fridge. Saved you a plate in there. I thank her with a kiss to the cheek before heading across the kitchen. It's not that I'm particularly hungry. Thinking of my lunch with Sebastian is enough to send my stomach back into roller coaster territory. But if I don't eat, I'll just disappear into my room where I'll obsessively reread his texts and possibly venture into less than wholesome territory, which, let's be real, is most likely going to happen anyway. The plate has a post-it note stuck to the saran wrap that says, "You are my pride and joy." I pull it off and smile, although I can tell I'm too frantic, eyes too wide. Mom watches me from the other side of the kitchen island. "You look a little wound up. You okay?" "Yeah, totally." The weight of her attention follows me as I heat my food and pour myself a drink. "What happened at work?" She steps around the counter, leaning against it like she's going to answer. My phone vibrates in my pocket. As usual, for this time of night, there's a text from Autumn, but there's also a text from Sebastian. "Thanks for lunch, by the way. I wasn't having the greatest day, and you turned it around. Night, Tanner." The roller coaster inside my stomach reaches the top of the hill and goes careening over the edge. "Tanner?" Mom pulls her hair up into a ponytail, securing it with an elastic from around her wrist. I tear my eyes from the screen. "Yeah?" She nods slowly and pours herself that glass of wine before motioning me to follow. "Let's talk." Oh, crap. I asked her about her day and then stopped listening. Leaving my phone on the counter, I follow her into the living room. On the giant easy chair in the corner, my mom tucks her feet beneath her, watching me sit down. "You know I love you." Inwardly, I wince. "I know, Mom. And I'm so proud of the man you're becoming, I could nearly burst." I nod. "I'm lucky. I know I am. But there are times when the declarations of adoration begin to feel excessive." She leans forward, uses her gentle voice. "I'm just worried about you, honey. I'm sorry I didn't listen to what you had to say about work." "That's not what this is about." "I know this already. Mom, Sebastian is a Mormon, not a sociopath." Mom lifts her eyebrow sardonically, as if she's going to crack a joke, but she doesn't. and in a wild rush of relief, I'm glad she doesn't. Defensiveness for him rises like heat in my chest. But everything between you is still platonic, or... I grow uneasy. Our family talks about everything, but I can't stop thinking about their faces the other night at dinner, and the realization that they have a very specific idea of the kind of guy I might end up with someday, someone just like us. What if I had more than platonic feelings for him? She looks pained and nods slowly. I don't think I'm entirely surprised. I went and saw him at lunch. I can see her swallowing her reaction down like a thick mouthful of cough syrup. You're okay with this, right? I ask. About you leaving campus? She leans back, studying me. Not really, but I know everyone does it, so I'm willing to pick my battles. About your sexuality? Absolutely. You never have to worry about that with your dad and me, okay? Now, I know this isn't the reality for most queer kids. I know I am endlessly lucky. My word comes out a little thick with emotion. Okay. But am I going to be okay with you pursuing an LDS kid, boy or girl? She shakes her head. No, Tanner, I'm not. This is just me being honest. And maybe it's my blind spot, but it genuinely troubles me. My gratitude is immediately extinguished. How would this be any different from his parents saying guys are off limits? It's completely different. Among 100 other reasons, going to church is a choice. Being bisexual is simply who you are. I'm protecting you from the toxic messages of the church. I actually laugh at this. And his parents are doing it to protect him from hell. It doesn't work like that, Tan. The church doesn't threaten fire and brimstone. My lid blows. How would I know what the LDS church says about anything? I ask, voice rising. It's not like you give us any level perspective on what they actually believe and how they function. All I know from you is that they hate the gays, they hate women, they hate. Tanner, I don't actually feel like the Mormon church hates much of anything. You're the one who hates them. Her eyes go wide, and then she turns her face away, taking a deep breath. Oh, shit, I went too far. If Mom were a violent woman, she probably would have stood up and smacked me just then. I can read it in the stiff line of her shoulders, her deliberately calming breaths. But Mom isn't a violent woman. She's gentle and patient and unwilling to rise to my bait. Tanner, honey, this is so much more complicated for me than you can possibly imagine. And if you want to talk about my history with the church, we can. Right now, I'm worried about you. You've always led with your heart first and your head second, but I need you to think about this one. Tucking her leg underneath her again, she says, You and Sebastian come from two very different places, and even though it's not the same thing your dad and I or Aunt Emily went through, it's not completely different either. I assume his family doesn't know he's gay. I don't even know if he's gay. Well, for argument's sake, let's assume he is, and your feelings are reciprocated. You know the church thinks it's okay to have same-sex attraction, but you aren't allowed to act on it? Yeah, I know. Would you be able to be with him without touching him? It's rhetorical, so she doesn't need me to answer. If not, how would you feel being a secret? Would you be okay going behind his parents' backs? What if his family is as close as we are? How would you feel if his parents cut him off because of his relationship with you? This time she waits for me to reply. But I don't honestly know what to say. This feels like putting the cart before the horse. Hell, before the entire stable. How would you feel if he lost his community? Or if the two of you genuinely fell in love, but in the end he chose the church over you? I deflect with a joke. We're barely texting. I'm not ready to propose just yet. She knows what I'm doing and gives me a patient, sad smile. I know. But I also know I've never seen you this intense about someone before, and in the excitement of all the firsts, sometimes it's hard to think about what comes after. It's my job to look out for you. I swallow. Logically, I know she has a point, but the stubborn part of my brain insists that the situations aren't exactly the same. I can handle this. Although Mom means well, my thoughts about Sebastian are a runaway train. The engineer is gone, and the engine is basically on fire. My attraction is beyond control. But once I'm up in my room, thinking about what she said, I calm down enough to realize that she's shared more with us than I give her credit for. I know how devastated Aunt Emily was when she worked up the courage to come out to her family, and her parents told her she was no longer welcome at home. I know she lived on the street for a few months before she moved into a shelter, and even there it wasn't very welcoming. She tried to commit suicide. This was the final straw for Mom. She dropped out of school at the University of Utah and took Emily with her to San Francisco. There she enrolled at UCSF and worked night shifts at a 7-Eleven to support them both. Mom went on to get a master's at Stanford. Emily eventually got her own master's from UC Berkeley. Their parents, my grandparents, who I know live somewhere in Spokane now, cut both of their daughters out of their lives and their will, and have never tried to find them. Mom tries to pretend like it doesn't still hurt, but how can that possibly be true? Even though they make me insane sometimes, I would be lost without my family. Would Sebastian's really kick him out? Would they disown him? Jesus, this is getting more intense than I expected. I thought it would be a short crush, a curiosity. But I'm in it now. And I know that Mom isn't wrong, that my pursuing Sebastian is a terrible idea. Maybe it's a good thing he's going to be gone from class when he's in New York. I head up to visit Emily and Shivani for the weekend, and, strangely, don't even feel the desire to text him. I'm sure Mom told Emily all about what's going on, because she tries to talk to me about my love life a couple of times, but I skirt the issue. If Mom is intense about it, Emily is nearly vibrating. They take me to see some weird art house movie about a woman who raises goats, and I fall asleep in the middle somewhere. They refuse to let me have wine with dinner, and I ask them what the hell having two heretic aunts is good for anyway. But Emily and I play pinball in the garage for about 4 hours on Sunday, and I eat about 7 plates of Shivani's chickpea curry before driving home, feeling pretty damn great about my family. It's amazing how a bit of distance and perspective seems to help clear my head. But then Sebastian comes to class the following week, wearing a dark gray Henley with the button open at the throat and his sleeves pushed halfway up his forearms. I'm faced with a landscape of muscle and vein, smooth skin and graceful hands, and how am I supposed to handle that? Besides, he seems more than happy to come over and look at my first few pages. He even laughs about the reference to Autumn's pussy poster and asks me with thinly veiled curiosity whether the book is autobiographical, as if he didn't already know. The question hovers in his eyes. Am I in it? That depends on you, I think. Obviously, my distance and perspective didn't last very long. I had a fleeting thing for Manny when we first met, even had a moment or two of alone time, imagining what it might be like with him, but it didn't last, and my attention was snagged by the next person who came along. Kissing boys feels good. Kissing girls feels good. But something tells me kissing Sebastian would be like a sparkler falling in the middle of a field of dry grass. Outside of school and a few snaps of her meals, I haven't seen much of Autumn lately. When she stops by around dinner one night, my mom doesn't even try to hide how excited she is to see her and invites her to stay. Afterward, we disappear into my room, and it's just like old times. I lie on my bed trying to organize the day's worth of post-it notes into something coherent for my next chapter, while Autumn goes through my clothes and gets me up to speed on school gossip. Did I know that Mackenzie Goble gave Devin Nicholson a blowjob on the balcony of the gym during the teacher basketball game last week? Did I hear that some kids went through the ceiling tiles in one of the bathrooms and made their way to the area above the girls' locker room? Did I hear that Manny asked Sadie Wayman to prom? This gets my attention, and I blink up to see her standing in one of my t-shirts. My parents have a strict door-open policy whenever anyone is over, boy or girl, but it doesn't seem to apply to Autumn. Which is honestly hilarious, because in the time I've been staring at my notes, she's been undressing and trying on my clothes. I forgot people are already talking about prom. She gives me the look that tells me I'm being slow. It's less than 4 months away. I brought it up in the car last week. I sit up. You did? Yeah, I did. She looks at herself in the mirror, tugging on the shirt. It's like you don't hear anything I say anymore. No, I'm sorry. I push my pile of post-its away and fully face her now. I'm sucked into my project and distracted. Tell me what you said. Oh, she says, annoyance extinguished for the moment. I asked if you wanted to go together so we didn't have to make it a big thing. Wow. I am a jerk. She essentially asked me to prom and I didn't say anything. I haven't given it any thought at all. It's true Autumn and I have gone to dances when neither of us had dates, but that was before Sebastian. I am an idiot. She studies me in the mirror. I mean, unless there's someone else you wanted to take. I look away so she can't see my eyes. No, I guess I just forgot. You forgot about prom, Tanner? It's our senior year. I grunt, shrugging. Abandoning my closet, she sits on the edge of the bed next to me. Her legs are bare, and my shirt hits her about mid-thigh. It's in moments like these that I realize how much easier my life would be if I felt for her, the way I feel about Sebastian. You sure you don't want to ask someone? Sasha? What about Gemma? I wrinkle my nose. They're both LDS. Oh, the irony. Yeah, but they're cool LDS. I tug her closer. Let's see how it goes before we decide. I haven't lost hope that Eric will pull himself together and make an honest woman out of you. Like you said, it's our senior year. Don't you want it to be a big deal? I don't want to... She begins half-heartedly, but I pull her down over me and then roll her into a ball, tickling her. Autumn squeals and laughs and calls me names, and it's only when Haley is pounding on the wall and Dad is yelling at us to keep it down that I finally move, satisfied that the subject of prom has been forgotten. Life here gets easier when the seasons change and the days grow longer. Other than the occasional hike or day of skiing, none of us have spent much time outdoors in months. It's left me stir-crazy, with too much time to think. By the middle of February, I'm so sick of my room and my house and the inside of the school that when the first real warm day comes, I'm willing to do just about anything, as long as it happens outside. The snow pushes away from the sidewalks a little more each day until there are only a few patches left on the lawn. My dad left the truck, the trailer, and a to-do list with my name on it taped to the fridge Saturday morning. I tow our boat from the side of the house to the driveway and pull off the tarp. Silverfish scamper away. It's musty and dark inside, and I survey how much work I have ahead of me. We're still months away from being able to use it, but it needs some serious TLC. There are puddles of melting snow everywhere on the driveway. With the oil from the street and the tangle of leaves and branches, it looks disgusting, but I know where it leads. Sunshine and outdoors and the smell of barbecue all weekend long. We're having the seats reupholstered and the marine carpet replaced this April, so I start pulling the old stuff out along with the adhesive. I wouldn't categorize any of this as enjoyable, but since I don't have an actual job and gas doesn't buy itself, I do what my dad tells me. I get out everything I need, laying another large tarp down on the grass to make hauling it away easier. I've just pulled the driver's seat out when I hear brakes squeaking mildly, hear tires coming to a stop on the driveway behind me. I swing around to see Sebastian standing next to a bike, squinting up into the sun. I haven't seen him outside of class in 2 weeks, and it causes a weird ache to push through me. Straightening, I walk over to the edge of the deck. Hey. Hey, he says back, smiling. What are you doing up there? Earning my keep, apparently. I believe you call this service, I say, using my hands to form air quotes around the words. He laughs. And my stomach clenches. Service is more, finger quotes, helping others, and less, more finger quotes, fixing my dad's fancy boat. But okay. Holy crap, he's teasing me. I motion to the mess at my feet and strewn across the tarp. Do you see this monstrosity? This is not fancy. He peers over the side. Keep telling yourself that. Kneeling down, I bring my face within a few inches of his. What are you doing here anyway? I was tutoring in the neighborhood. Thought I'd stop by. So you go to school, write, work as a TA, and tutor? I am lazy. Don't forget all the church service. Stepping back, he looks away, cheeks burning. But I wasn't really in the neighborhood. It's taking my brain a moment to get from point A to point B, and when it finally connects the dots, that he came here specifically to see me, I almost jump over the side and tackle him. Of course I don't. I can see by the way he's gripping the handlebar that he's not entirely comfortable with the admission, and a pang of hope blooms inside me. This is how we reveal ourselves, these tiny flashes of discomfort, the reactions we can't hide. In some ways, it's why it's so terrifying to live here and have my sexuality safely known only behind my front door. Outside, I could give myself away by a twitch of my lips at the word faggot, by staring at someone too long, by letting a guy friend hug me and doing it wrong, or by being nervous simply because he wanted to stop by. I'm probably just projecting, probably seeing this out of my own hope, but still, I want to climb down, gently pry his hands from the bike, and hold them. I crack a joke instead. I noticed you didn't disagree with the lazy part. I see how you are. The line of his shoulders eases, and he lets go of the handlebar. I mean, I didn't want to say anything, but... You could stop hassling me and come up here and help. Sebastian pushes his bike to the grass and slips off his jacket, surprising me when he easily hops onto the trailer and up onto the stern. See? Now you're getting what service is all about. I know there's a joke in there about servicing, but I managed to keep it to myself. With his hands on his hips, Sebastian looks around. What needs to be done? I need to pull out the seats and rip up the old carpet. Oh, and scrape up the adhesive. Bet you're sorry you're such a good person now. I hand him my gloves and give myself 3 seconds to stare at him. There's not a wrinkle or a stitch out of place. He's been outside in the sun lately, too. His skin is a warm brown. You don't need to give me those, he says, pushing them away. I think there's another pair in the garage. Sebastian concedes, and I hop down, taking a second to breathe as I slowly make my way toward the garage and back to the boat again. If I were taking Mom's advice, this would be the perfect opportunity to lay out a boundary about things, to clarify that although he knows something about me that no one else knows, nothing between the two of us could ever happen. Soon, I tell myself, I'll tell him soon. Probably. We manage to get the other front seat out, along with the bench, and even though it can't be above 60 degrees, a record for this time of year, we're both sweating by the time we tackle the carpet. So, don't take this the wrong way, he says. But why is your dad having you do this instead of, I don't know? With a guilty tilt of his head, he glances over at my house. Paying someone? I follow his attention to my house. Our neighborhood is arguably the nicest in this part of Provo. Houses have curved driveways and long, rolling lawns. Everyone has a finished basement, and many of us have in-law quarters over our garages. It's true that my parents make good money, but they are anything but spendthrifts. Mom will save a penny anywhere she can. Her reasoning is, she already let Dad buy a boat. She's not going to let him hire someone to maintain it. Sounds a lot like my mom, too. Sebastian tightens his grip on a particularly tough section of carpet and pulls. A satisfying rip moves through the small quarters. The saving penny part, anyway, he clarifies. Her motto is, use it up, wear it out, make it do, or do without. Please never tell my mom that. She'll put it on a shirt. Or a bumper sticker. With the carpet finally pulled free, Sebastian stands and throws it over the side where it lands on the tarp with a whack and a plume of dust. Using the back of his arm, he wipes his forehead. It feels like a crime the way I have to force my eyes away from his torso. Looking around us, he surveys the damage. Still, old or not, this is a pretty nice boat. Yeah, it is. I push to stand, climbing down onto the driveway. Both of my parents are still gone, and inviting him in seems tantalizingly criminal. You want something to drink? Sure. Sebastian follows me through the garage and into the house. In the kitchen, I open the fridge, grateful for the refrigerated air on my face, and survey what we have. Dad is at the hospital, and Mom and Haley are shopping. I'm grateful, but also acutely aware that we are alone. We have lemonade, Coke, Diet Coke, vitamin water, coconut water. Coconut water? My mom likes to drink it after she works out. Personally, I think it tastes like watery sunscreen. Sebastian steps up behind me to peer into the fridge, and my breath catches in my lungs. It's a wonder they don't put that on the package. When he laughs, I can feel the way it moves through his chest. I am not okay. He clears his throat. Vitamin water is fine. I pull out 2 bottles and hand him one, pressing the other against my face when his back is turned. Your dad's a doctor? He asks, taking everything in. I watch as he untwists the cap and puts the bottle to his lips for a long drink. My heart beats in time with each swallow. 1, 2, 3, and I'm pretty sure I don't breathe again until he does. Yeah, up at Utah Valley. I turn back to the fridge, hoping my voice doesn't crack. You want something to eat? Sebastian walks toward me. Sure. Do you mind if I wash my hands? Yeah, good call. Side by side, we stand at the sink, lathering our hands and rinsing them under the tap. Our elbows knock together, and when I reach across him for the towel, my hip bumps into his. It's just a hip, but my mind goes from hips to hip bones to what's in between in a fraction of a second. My perving is nothing if not efficient. Realizing I can't just stand there at the sink and think about his hips, I hand him the towel and return to the fridge. Sandwiches okay? Yeah, thanks. I pull out lunch meat and cheese and whatever else I can find, and snag plates and a few knives from the dishwasher. Sebastian has taken a seat on one of the kitchen stools. I slide the bread across the counter toward him. So, how's the project coming? He untwists the plastic bag, placing bread on the plates. Project? He laughs, leaning forward to meet my eyes. You know, the book? For the class you're in? The book, right. The lunch meat is new, so it requires a little of my attention to open, which means I get at least 10 seconds to stall. It's still not enough. It's great. He lifts a brow, surprised. Great? Everything I've written lately is about you, but it's cool. No need for things to be awkward between us. Yeah, I say with a shrug, unable to come up with anything more articulate under the weight of his attention. I feel pretty solid. Sebastian rips a piece of lettuce off the head and places it neatly on the center of his bread. You going to let me read more? Yeah, totally, I lie. Now? My answer comes out too sharply. Not yet, no. You could come by after school next week and we could look through it. A mouthful of water seems to solidify in my throat. With effort, I swallow. Really? Sure. How about Friday? It gives me nearly a week to edit the book. Okay. Bring me the first few chapters. His eyes twinkle. I have just over 5 days to triage my book, change the names, at the very least, maybe take this book out of diary territory and into novel territory. Lord, give me strength. We eat in silence for a few minutes, passing the bag of chips back and forth and finally cracking open a few caffeinated Cokes, so scandalous, when Sebastian stands walking over to a photograph stuck to the fridge. That's a great picture, he says, leaning in to get a better look. Where was this? This building is insane. It's a photo of me the summer after 10th grade. I'm standing in front of a towering, elaborately constructed church. That's the Basilica of the Sagrada Familia in Barcelona. Sebastian blinks over to me, eyes wide. You've been to Barcelona? My dad had a big conference and brought us along. It was pretty cool. Moving to stand just behind him, I reach over his shoulder and touch part of the photo. It looks different on each side, where I'm standing is the passion side, and it's simpler than the others. And in these towers, I point to the stone spheres that seem to stretch into the clouds, you can take a lift to the top. Your expression, he laughs. You look like you know something the person taking the picture doesn't. I look down at him, so close I can see the freckle he has on the side of his nose, the way his eyelashes practically touch his cheeks when he blinks. What I want to tell him is that I'd made out with a guy on that trip, only the second guy I've ever kissed. His name was Dax, and he'd been visiting with his parents. We snuck off during a dinner with a bunch of other doctors and their families and kissed until our lips were numb. So yeah, I guess I did know something the person taking the picture didn't know, but I told Dad and Mom about Dax a few months later. I want to tell Sebastian that he's right, if only to see his reaction when I explain why. I have this thing about heights, I say instead, and nearly lost it when my parents explained we had tickets to go to the top. Lifting his chin, he looks up at me. Did you go? Yeah, I did. I think I held my mom's hand the entire time, but I made it. Maybe that's why I look a little proud. Sebastian steps away, sitting at the counter again. We drove 40 miles to Nephi once, he says. I think it's safe to say you win. I cough out a laugh. Nephi sounds pretty cool. We visited the temple in Payson and watched a handcart reenactment along the Mormon Trail. So, yeah. We both laugh now. I cup a sympathetic hand on his shoulder. Okay, well, maybe you'll win the next one. I don't think that's going to happen, he says, grinning at me over the top of his Coke. His smile dumps endorphins into my veins. Maybe when we get the boat finished, we can take it out. He sets his can down next to his plate. You've done that before? I mean, I've never pulled the trailer by myself, but I'm sure I can handle it. You could even come with us when we go to Lake Powell in July. Sebastian's face falls for a fraction of a second before his standard perfect persona slips back into place. Sounds good. Maybe we'll get lucky and it'll warm up soon, I say. An early summer. I wonder if he can see the way my heart is banging against my ribs. I hope so. Chapter 8. I spend all of my free time every weeknight frantically doing a find and replace for the names Tanner, Tan, and Sebastian. Tanner becomes Colin, Sebastian becomes Evan. Everyone I go to school with gets a new generic name. Autumn becomes Annie, Fujita becomes Franklin, and the class becomes an honors chemistry lab. I realize it's an exercise in futility. Even when I save the book in a new version where Colin is actually interested in Ian, one of the LDS students in the class, I know my changes are sloppy and unconvincing at best. Friday after school, with the first four chapters printed and tucked under my arm, I walk from my car to the front door of Sebastian's house. I would swear under oath that their doorbell is the loudest in existence. At least it feels that way as soon as I've depressed the button. My pulse takes off without looking both directions. My nerves get slammed by an 18-wheeler. But there's no going back now. I am about to enter Sebastian's house. The bishop's house. This isn't really my first rodeo. I've been inside Eric's house before, but his place is more LDS light. Eric's senior photo now hangs where the portrait of the Savior used to be. They still have a framed photograph of the temple on the wall, but they also have a coffee maker, like civilized people. This all means that part of the anticipation I'm feeling is the same way an archaeologist might feel before a big dig in Egypt. There's going to be a lot to unearth here. Heavy footsteps land on the wood floors inside. They're heavy enough to make me wonder whether it's Mr. Brother on the other side of the door. And then I panic in a burst because I got my hair cut and put on my best clothes. And what if instead of looking passably Mormon, I look super gay? What if Sebastian's father immediately sees my intentions for what they are and sends me away, forbidding his son from ever talking to me again? My panic spirals. I'm clean, but I don't look particularly clean-cut. I'm obviously in lust with Sebastian. My dad is Jewish. Is that bad? There aren't a whole lot of Jews in Provo, but since we don't really practice anyway, I never considered how that might make me more of an outsider. God, I don't even know how to use the word covenant correctly. I feel sweat pricking at the back of my neck, and the door is swinging open, but it's only Sebastian, with a kid in a headlock under his arm. This is Aaron, he says, spinning slightly so I can see his brother better. This is Tanner. His brother is lanky, smiling, and has a head of dark floppy hair. A miniature version of his big brother. Well done, genetics. Aaron pushes away and stands, extending a hand for me to shake. Hi. Nice to meet you. He's 13, and here I am wondering whether my handshake is sufficient. Mormons just seem so fucking good at these things. I let go and smile, resisting the urge to apologize. The cursing is going to have to stop, even if it's only in my head. Almost as if he can tell there is a silent Chernobyl happening inside me, Sebastian ushers Aaron back inside and then tilts his head for me to follow him. Come in, he says, and then grins. You won't catch fire. Inside it is immaculate and very, very Mormon. It makes me wonder how similar this is to Mom's childhood home. Up front, there is a living room with two couches that face each other, an upright piano, and an enormous framed picture of the Salt Lake Temple. Beside it is a framed painting of Joseph Smith. I follow Sebastian down the hall, past a curio cabinet with a white statue of Jesus with his hands outstretched, framed photos of their four kids, and a wedding photo of his parents dressed completely in white. The two of them look like they're barely out of puberty, if I'm being honest, and the wedding dress nearly climbs all the way to her chin. In the kitchen, as expected, there is no coffee maker on the counter, but to my eternal delight, on the wall just by the kitchen table is a huge 8x10 photo of Sebastian standing on a brilliant green lawn, smiling from ear to ear and casually clutching a copy of the Book of Mormon. He catches me studying it and clears his throat. Want something to drink? Root beer? I see. Lemonade? I break my attention away from the photo to look over at him in the flesh, somehow so different here in front of me, eyes more guarded, skin clear, even without photoshopping, stubble shadowing his jaw. And as ever my eyes are drawn to his splotchy cheeks, is he embarrassed or excited? I want to learn each and every one of his blushes. Water's fine. He turns and I watch him walk away before returning my attention to each of the framed wonders in this house, such as a document in a heavy gilded frame entitled The Family, A Proclamation to the World. I never see stuff like this. In our house, you'd be much more likely to see a liberal manifesto nailed to the wall. I've read to the fourth paragraph, where the LDS Church proclaims that, quote, the sacred powers of procreation are to be employed only between man and woman, lawfully wedded as husband and wife, when Sebastian presses a cold glass of water into my hand. I'm so startled I nearly knock it onto the floor. So, this is interesting, I say, working to keep my tone neutral. I'm torn between wanting to finish reading it and somehow unread everything I've already absorbed. I'm starting to understand what Mom means about protecting me from the church's toxic message. There's a lot packed into that one page, Sebastian agrees, but from his voice I can't tell how he feels about it. I knew all of this before I came over here. That is, sex is for heterosexuals, parents are obligated to teach their children these values, no sex before marriage, and above all, pray, pray, pray. But seeing it here in Sebastian's house makes it feel more real, which makes everything I've been feeling a little more unreal. I'm left momentarily dizzy by the realization that Sebastian's family aren't just enjoying the nice idea of this. They're not just visualizing an idealized world. They're not playing a game of, wouldn't it be nice if... They genuinely, truly believe in this God, in these doctrines. I look over at Sebastian. He's watching me, eyes unreadable. I've never had someone over before who wasn't a member, he says, the mind reader. I'm just watching you take it all in. I decide to go for pure honesty. It's hard to understand. I wonder if you opened the Book of Mormon and just read a bit of it, whether it would speak to you. He holds up his hands. I'm not recruiting you. I'm just curious. I could try. I don't really want to try. He shrugs. For now, let's go sit and talk about your book. The tension of the moment snaps, and only after it's gone do I realize I've been holding my breath, muscles clenched all over. We head into the family room, which is much cozier and less sterile than the living room at the front of the house. Here there are countless framed photos of the family, together, in pairs, alone leaning against a tree, but in every single one, they're smiling. The smiles look real, too. My family is as happy as they come, but during our most recent photo session, my mom threatened Haley with a closet full of colorful sundresses from The Gap if she didn't stop sulking. Tanner, Sebastian says quietly. I look at him, and a slow grin spreads over his face until he breaks, laughing. Is it that fascinating? The way he's teasing me makes me realize I'm acting like an early man emerging from a cave. Sorry, it's just so adorably wholesome. He shakes his head, looking down, but he's still smiling. Okay, so about your book. Yeah, Sebastian, about my book. My book about you. My confidence bolts, leaving the scene of the crime. I hand over the printed pages. I don't think it's great yet, but... This makes him look up at me, interest lighting his eyes. We'll get it there. Well, at least one of us is optimistic. I lift my chin, gesturing that he should dig in. He smiles, holding my gaze and offering a teasing, "Don't be nervous," before he blinks down to the pages in his hand. I watch his eyes flicker back and forth, and my heart is a grenade in my throat. Why did I even agree to this? Why did I try to rewrite the class sections? Yes, I wanted to spend time with Sebastian today, but wouldn't it be so much easier to keep this a secret from him until I know where he and I stand? As soon as I have the thought, I realize my subconscious has already won. I wanted him to look for himself in it. So much of this is taken from our conversations. I'm here because I want him to tell me which love interest he wants to be, Evan or Ian. He nods as he finishes, and it seems like he goes back and reads the last section again. I do not expect him to say, "I have some time this weekend, I could help then." This is probably a terrible idea. Yes, I'm attracted to him, but I worry that if I dig deeper, I won't like him. But that would be for the best, wouldn't it? It certainly wouldn't hurt to get some time outside of this class to get an answer to my question, Could we even be friends, let alone more? He swallows and I watch as it moves his throat. Does that work? He asks, pulling my eyes back up to his face. Yeah, I say, and swallow. This time he watches. What time? He grins, handing it back to me. Wow. Wow? I wince. Obviously that means it's horrible. I feel like an idiot. Don't, he says. Tanner, I really like it. Yeah? He nods and then bites his lip. So, I'm in your book? I shake my head. The pin is pulled from the grenade. No one we know. Well, except Franklin is a stand-in for Fujita, obviously. I'm just using the class as the structure. Running a hand under his bottom lip, Sebastian watches me for a few quiet seconds. I think this is about us. I feel the blood drain from my face. What? No. He laughs easily. Colin and Ian? Or is it Evan, the TA? It's about Colin and Ian, another student. Oh, God, oh, God. But, he starts, and then looks down, blushing. I struggle to hold my cards close to my chest. What? He flips to a page and puts his index finger there. You had a typo in Tanner here, right where I think you mean to put Colin. It didn't pick up on your search and replace. Arg. The same stupid typo in my name I always make. Okay, yeah, originally it was about me and some theoretical person. Really? He asks, eyes lit with curiosity. I fidget with the binder clip I'd used to hold the pages together. No, I know you're not. He flips to another page and hands it to me. I curse under my breath. With his hands laced together in front of him, Franklin rocks back on his heels. Seb has a very busy schedule, of course. I mentally groan. Seb. But he and I both feel that his experience can benefit each of you. I believe he will inspire you. Seb. I never did a search and replace for the nickname. Sebastian's about to say something else. His expression is impossible for me to read, but it doesn't look like horror when a voice rises from the doorway. Sebastian, honey? We both turn and look up at the sound. I want to kiss the woman who has derailed this awkward hellhole. His mother, I recognize from the photos, steps into the room. She's petite, with dark blonde hair pulled back in a ponytail, wearing a simple long-sleeved shirt and jeans. I don't know why I was expecting some frumpy floral sister-wife dress and a giant Molly Mormon bow in her hair, but my synapses quickly rearrange themselves. Hey, Mom, Sebastian says, smiling. This is Tanner. He's in the seminar this term. His mother smiles at me, walking over to shake my hand and welcome me to the house. My heart is still jackhammering around inside my ribs, and I wonder if I look like I might pass out. She offers me something to drink, something to eat. She asks what we're working on, and we both mumble out something blah-blah book-related without looking at each other. But apparently our answers were sufficiently wholesome because she turns to Sebastian. Did you call Ashley Davis back? As if on their own steam, Sebastian's eyes flicker to me and then back. Remind me again who she is? Her clarification makes my stomach plummet to my gut. The activities coordinator, she pauses, adding meaningfully. She organizes the singles ward. Oh, not yet. So, she says, smiling warmly, make sure you do, okay? I've told her you'll be calling. I just think it's time. It's time? What does that mean? Does it bother his parents that he's 19 and doesn't have a girlfriend? I thought he wasn't supposed to be in a relationship when he left on his mission. Do they suspect he's gay? He starts to speak, but she gently cuts in, answering some of my questions. I'm not saying you should grow attached to anyone. I just want you to know some people. Ugh, she means girls. So that when you come home... Okay, Mom, Sebastian says quietly, blinking to me and away again. He smiles at her to remove the insult of his interruption. She seems satisfied with this answer and moves on. Have we received your promotional schedule from your publicist? Sebastian winces, shaking his head. Not yet. His mom's smile droops, and a furrow takes up residence on her brow. I'm worried we won't have time to coordinate everything, she says. We still need to do your paperwork and coordinate with the MTC. If you leave in June, you'll be cutting it close. We don't know where you'll be going, so we assume you need 3 months at the center before you leave. In any other house, this detailed planning would have me making a crack about spies and Agent Q and pens that turn into machetes. Not here. But then something clicks. My brain suddenly feels like Mom's old Buick. She would always push the accelerator before the motor turned over and the engine would flood, needing an extra few seconds to clear. It takes me the same amount of time to realize Sebastian and his mom are talking about this summer, as in when he'll leave Provo for 2 years. The MTC is the missionary training center. He's leaving in 4 months. 4 months used to feel like an eternity. "I'll ask her," Sebastian says. "I'm sorry. When I last checked in, they told me they would be getting me an itinerary with my tour stops as soon as it was done." "We have so much to do before you go," she says. "I know, Mom. I'll follow up." With a little kiss to the top of his head, she leaves, and the room seems to be swallowed by tense silence. "Sorry about that," he says, and I'm expecting his face to be tight, but when I look at him, he's smiling broadly. The awkward conversation between us is gone. The awkward conversation with his mom, too. So much to coordinate. I need to get her this stuff soon. "Yeah." I pinch my lower lip, trying to figure out how to ask what I want to ask. But the move distracts him, and his smile slips as he watches me touch my mouth. I don't know what it is about that tiny break, but much like his reaction when he admitted coming to see me that day with the boat, it says so much. It says so much because the smile seems real until he looked at my mouth, and then it just totally shattered. The room is full of unspoken sentiments. They hang over our heads like rain clouds. "Where are you going?" I ask. He looks back up at my eyes, and the smile is nowhere to be seen now. "Oh, after my book tour, I'm going on my mission." "Right, right." My heart is 100 marbles rolling on the floor, and I don't know why I needed him to say it out loud. "And you're not sure where you'll be assigned?" "I'll find out in July, I think. As you heard, we still need to send in my papers, but I can't do that until the book comes out." Missions, from the outside, are hard to understand. Young men, and women sometimes, but not as often, leave their homes for 2 years to be sent to a location anywhere in the world. Their job? Make new Mormons. And not the sexy way, at least not yet. Missionaries make new Mormons the baptizing way. We've all seen them, walking or riding bikes in their clean trousers and pressed short-sleeved white shirts. They come to our doors with bright smiles, tidy hair, and glossy black name tags, and ask whether we'd like to hear more about Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. Most of us turn them away with a smile and a "no thank you." But my mother never says no. No matter how she feels about the church, and trust me, she doesn't let them talk about the Book of Mormon to her. "They're far from home," she said back when we lived in Palo Alto. And it's true, many of them are, and they're on their feet all day, pounding pavement. If we invited them in, they'd be as gracious and lovely as you can imagine. They'd take lemonade and a snack, and their gratitude would be effusive. Missionaries are some of the kindest people you will ever meet. But they will want you to read their book, and they will want you to see the truth, the way their church sees it. While they're gone, they aren't allowed to watch television or listen to the radio or read anything beyond a few church-sanctioned texts. They're there to dive deeper into their faith than they ever have, to be alone and become men, to help grow the church and spread the gospel. And they aren't allowed to leave a girlfriend behind. Of course, they aren't allowed to engage in any sexual behavior, certainly not with members of the same sex. They want to save you because they think you need saving. Sebastian wants to be one of them. I can't get the thought out of my head, and we're sitting here in his house, surrounded by the truth of it. Of course he wants to be one of them. He is one of them. The fact that he so easily saw himself in my book, that he knows I have feelings for him, doesn't change that one single bit. I don't even care about the farce of my novel anymore. I'd let him see the original version, the version where I clearly can't stop thinking about him, if he would promise me to stay. He wants to go on a mission. He wants to leave here and commit two of his best, hottest, wildest, most adventurous years to the church. He wants to give his life to this, really give his life. I stare at my hands and wonder what the hell I'm actually doing here. Glitter Heart Page has nothing on me. I am the king of naive. "Tanner." I look up at him. He's staring at me, and it's clear he said my name more than once. "What?" He tries to smile. He's nervous. You got quiet. Quite frankly, I have nothing to lose. I guess I'm still stuck on the part where you're going on a mission for 2 years. Like, it just hit me now, that's what you're doing. I don't even have to break it down further for him. He totally gets it. He gets the subtext, the I'm not Mormon, you are, the how long can we really be friends, the I don't want to just be your friend anyway. I see it in his eyes. And instead of brushing it aside or changing the subject or suggesting I learn the art of prayer, he stands up, tugging down the hem of his shirt when it rides up on the side. Come on, let's go for a hike. This is a lot to digest for both of us. There are a million trails headed up the hill, and when it's nice out, you'll usually pass someone on each of them, but Utah weather is unpredictable, and our warm front is long gone. No one is hiking. We have the outdoors to ourselves, and we trudge up the sludgy hillside until the houses in the valley are just tiny specks, and we're both out of breath. Only when we stop do I realize how hard we've both been pressing up the trail, exercising some demons. Maybe the same one. My heart is pounding. We are clearly headed somewhere to capital T talk. Otherwise, why not just put away the schoolwork and turn on the Xbox? And the possibilities of where this could go makes me feel a little insane. It's going nowhere, Tanner. Nowhere. Sebastian sits down on a boulder, bending to rest his arms on his thighs and catch his breath. I watch the rise and fall of his back through his jacket, the solid muscle there, but also the straight posture, the unique poise of him, and absolutely defile him in my head, my hands all over him, his hands all over me. I want him. With a small growl, I look away and into the distance at the BYU Y monument embedded in the distance, and it's honestly the last thing I want to see. It's made of concrete, and in my mind is a total eyesore, but it's revered in town and on the BYU campus. You don't like the Y? I look over at him. It's fine. He laughs at my tone, I think. There's an LDS story that the Native Americans who lived here many years ago told the church settlers that angels had told them whoever moved here would be blessed and prosperous. Interesting that the Native Americans don't live here anymore because of those settlers. He leans forward, catching my eye. You seem really upset. I am upset. About my mission? I'm certainly not upset about the why. He falters, brow flickering down. I mean, didn't you know that's what most of us will do? Yeah, but I guess I thought... I look up at the sky and cough out a laugh. I'm such a moron. Was there a time I could have stopped this train of feelings from barreling into my bloodstream? Tanner, I'll only be gone 2 years. My laugh is so dry it's dusty. Only... I shake my head, blinking down to the ground at my feet. Well, in that case, I'm totally not upset anymore. We fall into silence, and it's like a block of ice has been dropped between us. I am an enormous jerk. I'm being such a baby right now. I'm making this endlessly awkward. Can you at least call me when you're gone? I ask. I don't care anymore how crazy I sound. Sebastian shakes his head. Email or text? I can email family, he clarifies. I can go on Facebook, but only for church-related stuff. I feel when he turns to look at me, and the wind whips across my face so hard it hurts, but it also feels like the sky trying to slap some sense into me. Wake up, Tanner. Wake the hell up. Tanner, I don't... He rubs a hand on his face, shaking his head. When he doesn't finish the thought, I press, You don't what? I don't understand why you're so upset. He's fully staring at me now, brows pulled down low, but it isn't confusion there. At least I don't think it is. I mean, I know he knows. Does he just want me to say it? Does he want me to say it so he can explain gently why us being together is impossible? Or does he want me to admit how I feel so he can... I don't actually care why. The words are this heavy boulder in my thoughts, in every waking thought. And if I don't just let it roll straight out of me, it's going to crash around and break everything delicate inside. I like you, I say. But when I look over, I see that these words aren't enough. They don't clear away the expression on his face. and I know your church doesn't allow that kind of feeling. He waits, so still, like he's holding his breath. It doesn't allow for guys to have feelings like this. For other guys. He breathes out a barely audible, "No. But I'm not LDS," I say, hardly any louder than him now. "In my family, it isn't a bad thing. And I don't know what to do about how I feel or how to stop feeling this way about you." I was right. This doesn't surprise him at all. His face clears, but only long enough to cloud in a new way. Every feature grows tight. I wonder if maybe he wishes that I hadn't said anything at all, or that I'd just pretended that he was my new favorite dude bro, and I would miss platonic hanging out and fumbling through this stupid book project with him for the next 2 years. He starts, and then exhales in a controlled stream, like each molecule of air is coming out single file. "You don't have to say anything," I tell him. My heart is racing. It's a fist punching and punching and punching me from the inside. Stupid, stupid, stupid. I only wanted to explain why I was upset, and, I add, wanting the ground to open up and swallow me, also why my book is basically about how it feels to fall for you. I watch his throat as he swallows thickly. "I think I knew. I think you knew, too." His breath is coming out so hard and fast, his cheeks are pink. "Have you always liked guys?" "I've always liked whoever," I tell him. "I really am bi. It's about the person, not the parts, I guess." Sebastian nods, and then he doesn't stop. He just nods and nods and nods as he stares at his hands between his knees. "Why wouldn't you just be with a girl then?" he asks quietly. "If you were attracted to them, wouldn't it be so much easier?" "That's not something you get to choose. This is so much worse than I ever would have guessed. This is even harder than telling my dad. I mean, when I came out to him, I could tell he was worried about how the world might treat me and what kinds of obstacles I would meet that he would be unable to help me navigate. But I saw that reaction masked beneath the firmest discipline. He wants me to be accepted and does everything he can to hide his fears from me. But here, I was so wrong about this. I shouldn't have said anything to Sebastian. How can we even be friends after today?" I have the melodramatic thought that this is what it's like to have a heart broken. There's no shattering. There's just this slow, painful fissure that forms straight down the middle. "I think I've always liked guys," he whispers. My eyes fly to his face. His lower lids are heavy with tears. "I mean, I know I have. Oh my God. I'm not even attracted to girls. I envy you that. I keep praying I will be at some point." He puffs out a breath. "I've never said that out loud." When he blinks, the tears slide down his cheeks. Sebastian tilts his face up, looking at the clouds and letting out a sad laugh. "I can't tell if this feels good or terrible." My thoughts are a cyclone. My blood is a river overrun. I scramble to think of the best thing to say, what I would want someone to say to me right now. The problem is, him admitting this to me is huge. It's not the same as anything I've ever faced, even with my family. I go with my first instinct, the thing my dad said to me. "I can't tell you how good it feels that you trust me." "Yeah." He looks over to me, eyes wet. "But I've never..." He shakes his head. "I mean, I've wanted to, but never..." "You've never been with a guy?" He shakes his head again, quickly. "No, nothing. I've kissed guys, but honestly, I've never felt like... this." He lets this sink in for a beat. "I tried to change, and..." He squints. "To not even let myself imagine how it would feel... being with..." This is like a punch to my solar plexus. "But then I met you," he says. His meaning hits me even harder. I've been pulled out of my own body, and it's like watching this from across the trail. We're sitting on a rock, side by side, arms touching, and I know this moment will be seared into my history forever. "The first time I saw you," I start, and he's already nodding, like he knows exactly what I'm going to say. Yeah. My chest squeezes. I've never felt that way before. Me either. I turn to him, and it happens so fast. 1 second.